Hey everybody, it's Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt, and in different locales today. Power went out of my house, so traveled 15 minutes to my parents' house, so I'm in my dad's study where there's lots of pictures of airplanes. I thought, Stephen, I was going to put on one of his captain's hats, his old captain's hats. He's got a bunch of, he's a former airline pilot, and I was going to do the show like that. I decided against it. You're in Portland, so yeah, it's sure. Strange times over the last 2 years, and today feels especially strange.
I wish you had put on the. Could you get one? Do it before the end of the show, like we have a little video link
okay,
here.
Fine.
I would like to, because you know, if somebody wears one of those hats, you trust them, right? It's the most the most trustworthy hat there is, right?
You shouldn't.
So I think you
shouldn't necessarily. Maybe when they're flying the airplane, but outside of that, maybe not.
If you could do the whole show in the Chuck Yeager pilot voice too, the one where they go, "There's nothing to be alarmed about. This is just that you know that calming voice. That would be awesome."
Yeah. All right. I'll save that for the back half of this hour. Okay. We're gonna do the Montreal Rays story a little bit more in depth after the bottom of the hour here. We'll talk to Mark Tompkins as well from Tampa, who was all over this story. And if you haven't seen it, the split season idea, where the Rays and Montreal, with the Rays in Tampa, were going to split their season in Tampa and Montreal, and there were going to be two stadiums built. One for the first half of the season in Tampa and one for the second half in Montreal, and neither was going to have a roof because the weather was perfect in both locations in those time of the year. That's over. Major League Baseball shut it down. Today, I am feeling for a couple of people. One, and you know what? His pile of money kind of mitigates my feeling bad for him, but Stephen Bronfman, and hearing some of the clips from him today, the Montreal businessman who fronted this thing, he was very emotional. And our pal Ariel Helwani, Stephen, we promised him that we would sit in the stands in Montreal and watch the Montreal X-Rays play the Blue Jays. Doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's unfortunately it doesn't, and I'd forgotten about that with Ariel. Yes, the new Jerry Park. It is a shame. It's interesting listening to both Stu Sternberg, the owner of the Rays, and Stephen Bronfman, who led the Montreal group, talk about it today, because they sound like two guys who had the rug pulled out from under them. To be honest, I've talked about this in a lot over the last few months, but they had a deal. Right, this is not about their deal falling apart and their belief in being able to do this wavering in any way. This is about the executive council or the executive committee of Major League Baseball pulling the rug out from under them, and because they weren't willing to, you know, it's a radical idea for sure, and they weren't willing to be that radical. But you can sense the, you know, you're listening to Steve Bronfman and even listening to Sternberg, you can just sense the disappointment. They sound a little shocky, to be honest. That I don't think they thought this was going to happen. At least that this was, or that this was going to happen now. Anyway,
no. And Sternberg said he felt betrayed. Like, I mean, he was fed that line, but he said, "Yeah, betrayed is a word that makes sense." I mean, okay. We've talked to a myriad of different people about this and how Major League Baseball felt about it, but there are quotes, you can look them up. Rob Manfred has been on record as being very positive, very pro this idea. They almost briefly put signage up at the Trop during playoff games to signal to the fan base that this was a realistic possibility, that the clock is now ticking. Like, I wonder what happens next, because the lease is up at the Trop at the end of the 2027 season. So 2028, they're playing somewhere that's not Tropicana Field. Now, that might be somewhere else. I mean, I guess in theory it could be extended if they're building something else outside of Tropicana Field in Tampa. But this is, from what I've been reading, the timeline needs to be 2023. You need to start the business of building a stadium if you want to remain in Tampa by 2028. So something's got to give here very soon.
Well, that's right. Okay, you know, a couple of things. First, you know, I know the Rob Manfred, the idea that Rob Manfred was onside, and I think Steve Bronfman alluded to the fact that they thought Rob Manfred had been onside. I got to admit, I was told by somebody who would know before Christmas that Rob Manfred was not ever going to support this. Down, you know, that's it's you, I, like the notion that maybe he was paying lip service to this on one side while not supporting it on the executive level is, I think, likely. So, you know, it happens, right? People have a public position, or they say one thing to one person and another thing to another person. You know, again, I know, look, Rob Manfred doesn't run baseball. He works for the owners. So we always have to remember that. That's what commissioners are. And the other thing is this Tampa, you know, I see the mayor of St. Petersburg has piped up and said, oh, we, you know, we see possibilities and we can get a deal done and we want to redevelop this part of town. And but, you know, the stadium discussion in the Tampa Bay area has been going on. And, you know, we're all pretty – anybody who covers the Jays is pretty familiar with it. Obviously, we're down there in spring training, so you hear a lot about it. But this is, what, a 20-year discussion, maybe at least 15. And I think that they've tapped every county in that area trying to find somebody who would, you know, support it, you know, mostly financially. You know, like, obviously the mayor of St. Pete comes in. He senses opportunity here, right? They got nowhere to go. Yeah, we can cut a deal that's good for us. But the notion that they'll just get a stadium, I think if Stu Sternberg thought he could just get a stadium built, he would have built a stadium. You know, like, he didn't go down this Montreal road for bleeps and giggles, right? He wanted to, he didn't think he had any choice. And he didn't want to sell the team. So those were the two things. He didn't want to sell the team, and he wanted to have a foot in Tampa Bay, didn't want to move it, but he wanted to find a way that the business would make sense, and this is what they came up with. So, I don't know that suddenly, miraculously, a stadium is going to rise, you know, in the Tampa Bay area, and the Rays will be there full time, and they'll suddenly become a big money making operation. There's a lot of uncertainty here, and you alluded to the deadline. That's a real deadline.
Yep, and we'll see. I mean, I don't know if the fan base could get any worse as far as putting butts in seats there, but I wonder what effect this whole conversation over the last year or so has had on that fan base. We'll talk to Mark Topkin after the bottom of the hour. But the Maple Leafs are back in crisis mode, Stephen. We thought the crises were over. They were down 2-0 to the Blackhawks. They were 2-4-1, and yeah, all options were on the table, and then they became the best team in the National Hockey League since then. But now, they've blown 3-1 leads in 4 of their last 5 games. They lose 6-3 after leading 3-1 yesterday at MSG. And yes, their head coach is calling them soft. Let's talk to Jeff Merrick of the Jeff Merrick Show and 32 Thoughts. How's it going, Jeff?
Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta, Foxtrot, Tango, Victor. Am I giving you enough pilot speak here, Ben, to make you feel comfortable really in your dad's dorm? Okay, sorry.
Yeah. No, I can do the entire phonetic alphabet, okay? Listen, and sometimes I do for my 6-year-old, hoping that he'll retain some of that information. Yeah. This isn't the house I grew up in, though. I kind of wish it was. Like, I wish I was doing this for my old bedroom, you know, like for my bunk beds. That would have been cool, right?
Hang on. Did your parents do the thing where they after all the kids are gone, then they finally got the cool house? Then they got the fun house? Oh, jeez.
It's right next to a golf course. Yeah, no, it's yeah, no. My house that I grew up in, not nearly as cool as this. Oh, well, we make do. All right. How panicky should it be for the Toronto Maple Leafs right now?
I mean, everything is a crisis in Toronto, right? I mean, every fan wants too much information. Every fan wants to ride the roller coaster. And I get it. Like, it's fun. It's part and parcel of sports. And, you know, it's kind of what every market craves. You know, as much as people may, you know, make fun of, you know, the fan bases of Toronto and Montreal and most, if not all, Canadian centers, I mean, they would, you know, drool for this. This type of emotional attachment to a team. I look at it as, you know, they're 36 games into a season right now and they're having a blip on the radar. I mean, there's enough ammunition here for everybody who feels a certain way about the Maple Leafs to say, aha, there you go. And now even the coach is saying they're soft. So I think that if I'm a Maple Leafs fan through all of this, that's probably what I'm looking at here and saying, we hate it when people's suspicions about this team are confirmed, even though, you know, like in next game against, you know, the Islanders or the Ducks or the Wings or whomever, they could dispel all those rumors like that. So I just look at it. It's a moment in the season. It's a very long season. It's about to get very compressed, and there's going to be a lot of games, and there's probably going to be, you know, sloppy play because of it, and because fatigue and exhaustion is going to enter the mix once again in hockey through February as they try to get these games in. But if I'm a Maple Leafs fan, sure, it's salt on an open wound. I'm not a big fan of what, you know, the words that Sheldon Keefe used yesterday, but I just look at it as it's a couple of sloppy games here on the calendar.
I just think, though, Jeff, though, the words he used, because this is, you know, the reason we're having this discussion to a large degree. If Sheldon Keefe had gotten up and said something about it being a long season and you're going to have these kind of ups and downs and, you know, we're missing a couple of key pieces, et cetera, then, you know, it's a different, calming the waters, right, which a coach will do in a lot of circumstances. But in the course of, a week, or it was a little more than a week, he has called his team both out of shape, or questioned their conditioning, and then used what is a fighting word, or maybe a non-fighting word in hockey, right? Soft, yes. Which you just don't throw that one out there.
Oh, that's the one, Stephen. You know it. Like, that is the one. You can call hockey players a lot of things, and they'll shrug it off. They'll tai chi that, no problem. Let it go by. Soft is a line for a lot of these guys. Soft is a tough one. I don't know that. I'm not so sure that sat well with people above Sheldon Keefe. I would imagine it wouldn't. I mean, not that it's a five-alarm fire here or anything like that, but I think that's probably one of those ones that if you're Sheldon Keefe, you might want back, and anyone above Sheldon Keefe probably looks at that and says, you might have wanted to choose your words a little better. Like, it's almost like, how many times have you seen at a press conference a coach go out the door and around the block to avoid using that word?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can call players a lot of things. That's the one in this sport and many other contact sports that you don't want to call a player. That's the one that gets the guys' backs up. But you're right. It's been a couple of games here where, whatever elements that go into making up a hockey player have been questioned. And I think at the end of it, too, like, these two games were really sloppy. Like, the St. Louis Blues game on Saturday, you can make the argument the Leafs were lucky to get out of with 2 points. Now, they're lucky to probably get out of that one with any points, the way they played at times. I look at it, there's two sloppy plays here, and I'm sure if the coach could do it again, he'd probably choose his words a little wiser.
I definitely made waves here. I think when you talk about the suspicions being confirmed, I think, well, one of those is that the blue line might not be strong enough, and especially without Jake Muzzin and, Justin Hall to, a lesser degree, but it really feels like Jake Muzzin is like the linchpin of this entire team, Jeff.
You know, it's the interesting thing about Jake Muzzin, too, and, technically John Tavares is the captain, but, a lot of people will tell you, John Tavares is a very quiet type person, it's the on-ice leadership, all those things we hear about and see about John's game. Muzzin's a big voice in there. Muzzin's a big guy in the room, and he does one, he does a couple of things that no other defenseman on this blue line do. Is he as good a skater as Morgan Riley? No. Is he as, does he have the defensive vision for zone exits like TJ Brody does? Well, no. But he is the most physical of all the defensemen. When he's healthy, that is. He's the most intense in that respect defenseman the Maple Leafs have. And you notice it when he's out. Like, you're noticing it right now. Pumping up minutes for Rasmus Sandin and Timothy Liljegren. You really need someone back there to replicate what Jake Muzzin can do. And listen, you saw it in the playoffs. How many times have we seen it in the playoffs? Jake Muzzin gets injured, either can't start the playoffs or is injured during the playoffs, and the Maple Leafs all of a sudden are a different team. It is so fascinating the way that when the conversation turns to the Maple Leafs, the conversation is Matthews and Marner and Tavares and Nylander and Morgan Riley and lately Jack Campbell. Perhaps one of the players, and I'll throw Jack Campbell probably on top of all of it considering the nature of the position, but outside of the goaltender, can you think of a player that, you would want out of the lineup less than Jake Muzzin? Like, at least, Marner's out. Okay, there are guys that can kind of, can fill that spot in. Austin Matthews, John Tavares, William, like, there are players that can.
They've gotten by
replicate
without Matthews, though.
Well,
Matthews
that's the thing.
Has,
like,
been injured, and they haven't imploded.
They have players that can do what those guys do, albeit in a minor key. They can't do it the same way, but they can get by. It does seem pretty obvious that when Muzzin's out of the lineup, this is a really different team. Like, his value to this team, I don't think has been discussed enough.
Yeah, no, like, it's, I think you're right, Jeff. But I do, that, again, just to get back to what the coach said a little bit,
yep,
because that's a card he, again, he could have, He could have said that. You know, we really miss Jake Muzzin. You could get away with saying that in a post-game presser. Talk about how valuable he is. So, you know, so his words, you know, uttered in January, you know, either ill-chosen or carefully chosen, because I'm not sure. It could be both, right? But what does that, you know, what does that tell you about the kind of the state of mind in the organization heading into, you know, the tail end of a season where, you know, they've got to do some damage in the playoffs, and what he's accusing his own team of is exactly, you know, it's been its Achilles heel. It seems to me, boy, this is, you know, for it to happen right now, and again, it's a strange year, obviously, and they're playing in an empty building at home, and the schedule's all messed up and all that stuff, but to kind of on a quiet night in January to pull that out of your back pocket, you know, tells me something about maybe how people are actually feeling who wear the suits upstairs.
Well, what we all wondered about was, you know, is this Sheldon Keefe saying, you know, we need more bodies? And don't forget, like, this is on a day where the revamped schedule comes out as well. And Sheldon Keefe is looking at February for the Toronto Maple Leafs and seeing 9 games in 19 days and saying, you know, exhaustion is going to be a thing for these players. And also, you know, through February, I mean, how much am I going to get to practice my team? How much am I going to get to actually work with my team through February as we make up these games? Like, there's a tough stretch here for Toronto coming up. So whether, like, if it's carefully chosen, then I think that's a call to attention that, listen, we need to mind our knitting here, because we got a tough stretch coming up and we can't play as sloppy as we did against St. Louis and hope that, you know, we can surf on our skill and get through and maybe build up a 3-1 lead against the New York Rangers and maybe coast to a victory. If it's deliberate, I wonder how much of it is a reflection of he just saw the schedule for February and he doesn't like what he sees and he knows he needs to get their attention right now.
Well, and a lesser part of the story, I think Jake Muzzin's a huge part of the story, but I would say that Jack Campbell is becoming more a part of the story. He hasn't, I know he's allowed 5 goals and I think 3 of his last 4 starts, but not all of them have looked like some of the goals that he allowed yesterday look like, and his head coach is talking about the goaltending as well. And I know Peter Mrazek's been, well, he's not been healthy, and then when he's healthy, he hasn't performed to the level at which this team would like him to perform. But is it time to just, you know, give this guy a breather? And what do you think the real Jack Campbell is? Because this is still a guy who's top 3 in save percentage in the entire National Hockey League. Is he that? Is he just been playing above his head for a long period of time and having a bit of a regression now?
Well, we don't really know. Like, is this the reality? Like, is this really Jack Campbell, or is, you know, is he a .931 save percentage goaltender, or is he a .915 save percentage goaltender? Like, we don't have enough runway to really know. Like, I try to temper my judgment of goaltenders until they've, I don't know, played about, I mean, at least 100 games, right? And even then, maybe you don't get a better sense until they play like 150 games. Then you kind of get an idea of, you know, where these guys are at and how they play and what their tendencies are. And, you know, by then shooters have had a couple of looks at the goaltender. You know, the book gets written, and then all of a sudden you change a little bit, and, you know, the goaltenders change along with it. And then you see how everybody adapts. I mean, Jack Campbell's only played 115 NHL games. Right, we're not talking about a guy that we've seen 300 times here, and I always maintain that, you know, and even though he won a couple of Stanley Cups, Matt Murray's a lesson. Matt Murray is a lesson for a lot of people that not to make up your mind about goaltenders until you have a long track record, and all the shooters have had at least 2, maybe 3 goal rounds at that netminder. So I know it's not a really great talk radio answer, but my answer is I don't know. I don't know who the real Jack Campbell is, because I don't know that we've seen enough games out of him yet. And it's only been the last couple of this season and last where he's had any type of long stretches to put together. Like right now, it looks fantastic. Like at times, he's in that conversation with the goaltender he faced yesterday, Igor Shesterkin and Andrei Vasilevsky, as being, you know, competing for the Vezina. Throw Jacob Markstrom at times into that conversation as well. But I'm not ready to make my mind up about Jack Campbell yet. Bad answer by me, and I'll own it. But I'm not sure who this guy is. Coward. I don't know.
You're well, soft.
I'm soft.
Yes. So, okay. Again, I'm going to one more time go back to that word because, you know, Jeff, you've seen a couple of hockey teams over your time.
Bit.
You know, are they soft? Like, because I'll tell you something. If that word's in the vocabulary this spring, you know, you look at who they're going to be faced with in the playoffs, and soft teams aren't going to go that far in the playoffs.
See, the definition of it keeps changing too. Like once upon a time, Stephen, you look at the, you look at teams from the 70s. Soft meant something different then, mm-hmm. and even right through the 80s and the 90s, soft meant something different then, and tough meant something different then, and The definition now of toughness in the NHL, because there's only a couple of teams that have nuclear deterrence on the bench. We saw two of them actually in McDermott and Delorier go on that Colorado Anaheim yesterday, but that's rare. Like that used to be a nightly occurrence. To me, toughness is the ability to play three full periods consistently and hard. Like that's what the Florida Panthers do. And that's why people are looking at the Florida Panthers and saying, this might be the best team in the NHL right now because they play hard for a full three periods. Tampa does that. Look what Tampa did the other night. They played with four defensemen against the Los Angeles Kings, and Victor Hedman turned in probably the best performance we've seen any defenseman have this season, period. Two goals, one assist, 30, way deep into the 30s for time on ice. And he talked about how much, he loved it. And he relished that opportunity and that chance. That wasn't an excuse. That was an opportunity for him. Like, to me, that's toughness in the NHL right now. So, until you see teams doing that, at times Carolina does that. At times we see Colorado do that. When Vegas hits their stride, they can do that. And they can do it over a long stretch. To me, that's the definition of what tough is. If you don't do that, does it make you soft? If you can do it for two periods, does it make you tough or does it make you soft? I guess everyone's got a different definition of it. But if we're judging teams on, being hard or being soft, if you can consistently play for three periods the way the Panthers do, the way the Lightning do, the way the Avalanche are doing right now, that to me is tough. If you don't do that, are you soft? If that's your definition, then I guess that's the definition.
Last one from me, Jeff, before we go.
It's a very soft answer by me, by the way. I'm guilty.
Listen. Not quite as soft as, I don't know. No. you're getting harder as the
Well, I'll tell you what, there were
there
were soft plays. Like the way they gave a free pass to Chris Kreider to the net yesterday.
Yeah.
And Kreider's one of those guys who play three full periods and he will drive over you. The Rangers with Kreider on the left side have always done one thing, flip the puck in front of him and made foot races because he will not lose it. It's one of my favorite things to watch about Rangers games, and it has for years, the way they make Kreider, they create races for him. And he just blows guys up getting to the puck. It's one of the more fascinating games within a game, and we saw it again yesterday. Just put pucks in front of Rangers defense has been doing it for years. Just throw pucks in front of Kreider, make him chase it. He'll get it every time. We saw it yesterday going to the net.
I've got a question that you're not going to be able to sit on the fence on this one. You're going to have to take a take or a side. So Austin Matthews has a goal disallowed because of a kicking motion, which I think, you can quibble with a little bit, but it seemed like a pretty clear kicking motion. But his foot, his skate never left the ice. That was in no way dangerous, which is the intent of the rule is make sure that there are no dangerous plays in and around the net and around goaltenders and maybe heads and arms and all of that. Should that type of goal be allowed? Should you be allowed to kick a puck in if your skate is never in a dangerous position?
Yes. I've always maintained that. You can kick the puck anywhere safely and legally all around the ice. The only place you can't in a game is over the red line. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden, that play doesn't count or that play contravenes the rules. I understand it. Like, these are knives these are knives on boots that players are wearing right now. We don't want anything considering the nature of, goaltenders and goal mouth scrambles and all that. And we've seen what cuts can do to careers and how horrifying it is. But that play I'm fine with. I think you should be able to kick the puck in. To me, it's a skill. You look at guys in practice right now. I mean, how many times have you gone to a skate and guys would just practice essentially, stick handling with their skates? just handling the puck with their skates or taking bad passes off their skates. Like Marian Hossa was the king of this, just taking passes off his skate and kicking them up to his blade. I think it's a skill. And I think in an era where we're trying to increase offense and trying to increase excitement, I think playing the puck with your feet is one of the more fascinating and challenging and skilled things a player can do. I've got no problem with it, whether it's Austin Matthews or Ryan Reeves or whomever. It doesn't matter. You can kick the puck in as far. In my NHL, you can kick the puck in.
Yeah, in your NHL where they play on, like, green ice or whatever your crazy ideas. Yeah, okay.
Yes. When you have longer, I'll explain why.
Yeah, but you have the goalie has no catcher. It's just two blockers, right? Yeah, in Jeff Merrick's NHL.
The goalie's not allowed to freeze the puck because technically that's the lay of game, and you keep the puck hot. Keep the puck hot the whole time.
It's not a bad idea. Listen, that was not a soft response, and we appreciate that. Thank you for doing this.
Did I finish strong, Ben? Did I do okay? Did I come out all right?
You were great.
Yeah, your conditioning's fine. Yeah.
I did a full 25 minutes with you guys. Woo!
Yeah, nice job. See you, man.
Thanks, gents. Have a good day.
You too. Jeff Merrick. Hey, breaking news before we take the break here, Steven.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw it in my little chat there. Canada Soccer sending out a press release. So I know you're not in Ontario today. It was a very newsy day in Ontario as it was announced that things you can go back to indoor dining at 50% capacity starting January 31st, which is a day after Canada will play the United States at Tim Hortons Field. But no matter, 12,000 fans will be permitted to attend that sporting event in person. So it's something. I would say that's a good news story because it felt like it was going to be zero. And the Maple Leafs won't be able to return to 50% capacity until I think mid-February. So I guess this is a good news story.
Yeah, I did watch the snow shoveling premiere from here in my remote locale. So I was waiting for somebody to explain because I kept thinking about exactly this match and, you know, what's the outdoor capacity, and they never really got to it. Now, here's one little detail, though, because I just saw the press release here, Ben. So if you have purchased the ticket for said match, which, you know, there are 24,000 people who have, that doesn't mean you have a ticket for this match. They're going to start all over again. So it appears there is another ticket sale. All ticket purchases purchasers will be provided the opportunity to purchase tickets for the 30th January home match through a dedicated pre-sale window beginning at 10 a.m. Eastern on Tuesday, the 25th of January. A public on sale will follow on the 26th of January at 10 a.m. Eastern should inventory. Well, there will be no inventory remaining available. I got news for you because there wasn't any general public sale the last time because they were all gone. But so if you've got one of those tickets, I think you've got to go through it all over again and hope that you get.
You know what that sounds like to me? That sounds like, hey, guess what? Half as many fans, twice as much price. It sounds like we can recoup the same amount of dollars if we just jack up the price. Yeah.
Well, we'll see, I guess. But it does sound like a mad scramble coming up. Next week, the beginning of next week, for anybody who hopes to go. But it's, look, 50% is better than nothing. It's better than 500, and it'll feel like a crowd anyway. So that's that is in relative terms, it's good news.
Yes, it is. And we'll continue to follow that story. It'd be nice if Alphonso Davies was there. He will not, though, of course, and we wish him well as he recovers from myocarditis. When we come back, we'll get back into this Rays Montreal story. It's not going to happen, at least in the way that it was described to us. Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times was all over the story this afternoon, was at Stu Sternberg's media availability today. He'll join us next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Fan Drive Time, Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I'm at my dad's house because I have a power outage at my house. Stephen is in Portland for a reason that we will explain after 6 o'clock. I did find one of my dad's old pilot hats. My headphones do not fit over top of it, so I had to take it off, Stephen. But I did find it.
Oh, that's a shame. That's a terrible shame.
I know. It is. It's a brutal, brutal shame. It's a shame that, well, for the time being, there will be no plans to see Major League Baseball in Montreal. We'll find out perhaps if there's some scenario in which it does occur, but the split season scenario taken off the table today in Tampa. Let's talk to Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times. How's it going, Mark?
Going all right. Been a busy day, as you guys can imagine.
Yeah, no, I can absolutely imagine that. Do we know why specifically Major League Baseball's executive council killed this idea?
Not specifically. I mean, MLB didn't have anything to say. Rays owner Stu Sternberg said he never was given a full explanation. He speculated that it was, in essence, that they didn't want to kind of cross this barrier and be the first, you know, league to allow this, even though Sternberg thinks it's something that's going to become very common in pro sports. I think we all, you know, had a sense of how complicated this was going to be if it came right down to it, not only getting the two stadiums built in the two markets and working out that financing and adding in the complication of, you know, different municipalities and governments and countries and all of that, but also, you know, with players union, with radio and TV contracts, with territorial rights, with scheduling. So it may have come down to Stephen just being a matter. It was just too much when they, at least from an outside perspective, from Major League Baseball's perspective, there's a simpler solution, which is work out a stadium in a growing, thriving area in Florida that's got, you know, the 11th biggest TV market in the U.S. and a really good team that people aren't coming to. Figure out why not and get it done.
Now, Mark, you have covered the Rays long enough to know that that is not a simple solution, though. It's been a very complex solution, which is how we got to this point in the first place. The notion of the Twin City agreement only arose out of the fact that Stu Sternberg couldn't find a home for that stadium, correct?
Yeah, that's very accurate, and that's pretty much it. And that's kind of the irony of, like I say, of where this came from and how it came to, and now it ending without a specific explanation. But they're kind of back to where they were, which is, do they find a way? They've dismissed it. They've tried twice. They've dismissed it most recently of finding a long-time, full-time home here in the Tampa Bay area. And I think now they have to kind of circle back to that. And, you know, is it going to be maybe not as good of a location as they would have wanted? Or, you know, they have to kind of compromise on what kind of roof they put on it and figure out a way to make this work financially for the community and for them. And it's quite a task. So it's very complicated. And, you know, that if it didn't work because the shared city idea was complicated, well, it's going to be complicated for the Rays to figure out how to make it work here.
Yeah, I mean, there were some pretty powerful words being used today. Betrayed was one, and it felt very emotional for both Sternberg and Stephen Bronfman. And I talked earlier about how, at least publicly, Rob Manfred had been positive about this proposal. How surprising was it for everybody that this came out today?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, one of the Rays team presidents, Brian Ald, I talked to him, and he said he felt like they got the rug pulled out from under them. And you know, I wrote one of those stories, as others did too, I'm sure, that Rob Manfred was behind it. I look back, my quotes from him were from February 2020. So, you know, did something change, or did the further they got into it, they realized it became more complicated? I'm starting to lean in that direction. But it would have helped if there had been some more clarity, if there had been a release or something from MLB that kind of spelled it out. But I don't know that we're going to get it. I mean, Stephen Bronfman was also asked that on his media Zoom call, and you know, he kind of similarly speculated maybe it was just too much of a hurdle for MLB to want to try. And then he was very confident, as Stu Sternberg was down here, that it was going to work.
He certainly, Stephen Bronfman in that avail today, Mark, certainly sounded like a guy who didn't see this coming. You know, and I guess that applies to Stu as well. Again, as my memory of this is just before the lockout, they were supposed to deal with this at the executive committee level. Then that meeting, then it got kind of pushed off the agenda because of the labor stuff. Was it ever formally considered, as far as we know, is it the executive council, executive committee of baseball? Again, it's hard to know what's going on during a lockout, but I don't know that they ever had another formal meeting, did they?
I think they had a meet, you know, at least by telephone or Zoom to cast this vote in which they rejected it. So it was discussed, as far as I know. You know, how in depth did they get? I don't know that. I don't get the sense that like the players union was consulted or anything like that. I do think that this came from at the ownership level, and it was a surprise. You're right. It did take them by surprise. They took it hard. I think the Rays' perspective was there were four approvals that needed to be obtained for this to happen. One was from MLB, then kind of on, you know, parallel tracks, Montreal and Tampa, to get the two new stadiums built with all of the municipal approvals that we alluded to before. And then the Players Union working something out with them to, you know, provide some type of financial remuneration for the players that were going to have to move midseason, maintain two homes, move their family, and all the logistical issues that, you know, you guys, you know players who come to Toronto for the first time need some time. Sometimes they have trouble getting adjusted initially, and you'd have that same situation here, maybe a further complication with the language barrier in Montreal with a lot of French-speaking people. So there was going to be a tough negotiation with the union. I think the Rays thought that the MLB approval was the easiest part of that. Like, they'd get that, then they'd get the two stadiums figured out, and then they'd be able to kind of go to the union and say, look, this is in place. Let's work out a deal to make this happen. And it never got past the first one. So door number one never opened. They never got to doors two, three, and four.
Yeah, very surprising. So what's next? Because we know that the lease on the Trop ends at the conclusion of the 2027 season, so they need a new home for opening day 2028. Stu Sternberg has said that he has not explored relocation. I'm sure they'll look down the stadium option again in Tampa, but as Steven mentioned, it's been, yeah, they've tried that before and they've come up empty. Is relocation on the table for this franchise?
I think we've probably got about a year to resolve that issue, because I think if you get to the spring of 2023, you have to know where you're playing in 2028, just from a construction timetable standpoint. Now, you know, I think you could probably also say most places that you would consider relocation to probably have AAA or something similar now, so you could play in a modified stadium if you had to for a year or two. The Trop could possibly be extended for a year or two if you were moving here locally in the area. So that's not maybe a hard deadline, but I think you kind of have to know by this time next year. And, you know, Stephen Brofman told an interesting story, and I wrote about it and just got posted on TampaBay.com, that when he first started talking to Sternberg about this, he said, why don't you just move the team to Montreal? And he said Sternberg was adamant at that point, I don't want to leave the Tampa Bay area, but I've got an idea. Let's see if we can make this work, and came up with this, you know, the split, the shared city, sister city, whatever you want to call it, concept. So, you know, I think Stu Sternberg has been consistent in that messaging, but he also today kind of admitted on his interview that, you know, other people have told him you should play the relocation card. That's kind of the you know, relocation 101 is what teams do. You threaten to move, and that's how you get a stadium built. And he said he's been reluctant to do that, maybe to his own hindrance. So, you know, do I think it will never happen? No, I think at some point the Rays will have to play the relocation card. But I do think they're going to try and find, for the, you know, third time in this area, full time and fourth overall, a way to get a stadium that'll get them better attendance, that'll get them better revenues, allow them to be more competitive and, in their mind, a little bit more self-sufficient.
Now, Sternberg, Mark, has also been adamant that he wouldn't sell the team, correct? Like, that's also part of this.
Yeah, I happen to be the person who asked him. I'm sure others would have as well. But, yeah, no plans to solicit permission for relocation, no plans to sell the team. I mean, he wants to own the team, and, you know, he has bought a place down here. He spends a lot more time down here than he did in the early years of his ownership. And, you know, he's talked about wanting to keep this team in his family, have it here for generations to come. And I think there's a lot of things exciting going on in this area. There's been a lot of, you know, condos, apartments built, a lot of people moving in, a lot of things happening that are very positive on both sides of the Bay, Tampa side and St. Pete side. But someone has got to make this happen. I mean, usually it's not the team owner who goes around and rallies the community. Usually there's someone in the business community that steps up and kind of leads this effort, and then that's kind of been absent too.
Well, it was a surprising news item, especially with the league pretty much at a standstill in a lockout. But, yeah, big news day down in Tampa, I'm sure. Mark, thanks so much for doing this. Appreciate it.
No problem, guys. We'll catch up to you soon.
Sounds good. Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times. The timing thing is interesting, Stephen. Like, yeah, the idea that, as Mark says, the other things were supposed to be the hurdles, the getting the approval from the league, the commissioner, I mean, the other owners that constitute the executive council, I'm not even sure who is on that. I don't know if Edward Rogers is a part of that, but that was supposed to be the first hurdle, but not much of a hurdle. It was convincing the players, and it was the other things that were supposed to be the problems. Turns out that they couldn't even get to that because the other owners and the commissioner weren't having it.
See, I think Stu Sternberg believed that because he had made a good faith effort to get a stadium built in again various parts of Tampa and had never threatened to move the team, that the owners, you know, the other owners would support him in this, in this plan, even though the plan, everybody acknowledges the plan is different and a bit radical and kind of hard to wrap your head around. But, you know, I like, the thing is, he kind of played ball, right? He didn't burn that market. He didn't put a gun to their head. I think he thought, again, in good faith that the owners and the commissioner would support him. And then they would have to go to the Players Association, and that was going to be a difficult negotiation. But I know they had started they were well along the way, at least talking to the current Rays players about what it could be and what it might be like and how they could help facilitate it. And, you know, what it's, you know, move your family up there after the school year is done, and we'll do the best we can to make it easy for you. And plus, it's a really nice place. It's a better place to be in the summer than Tampa. You can imagine if the Players Association gets involved, it's a whole other kind of negotiation. But yeah, I think these guys must feel, especially Sternberg, must feel a little betrayed by his fellow owners here, because he kind of played this about as well, you know, as he made a good faith effort to do it the other way, and it just didn't work.
Could it be that, I mean, once it got past the executive council, it eventually gets to Major League Baseball Players Association, and it would have been an ask, right? And you're in the middle of an ask right now, a rather large ask. I wonder if the timing does play into this, that we are in the middle of a lockout, that Major League Baseball didn't want another thing. Like, that is, it's perhaps not the same bargaining chip as reaching free agency 5 years instead of six, but it's, hey, also, can you guys sign off on splitting time if you play for this franchise in Montreal and Tampa? I wonder if that played into it.
Well, it's a good question, because, you know, you're going to think of what's changed. Well, that's what's changed, right? Now they knew that the collective agreement was about to expire. It's not like it was a surprise, and it's not a surprise that they locked out the players and that they're in a bit of a kind of bitter negotiation right now, because everybody knew that was coming and everybody's known it was coming for years. But I just get the sense, I get the sense now that people were saying one thing to Stephen Brofman, Stu Sternberg, and maybe saying another thing to each other among that group. So that's kind of the way this feels right now. And again, this would have come to a head in November at the executive meeting. It was on the agenda, and it got pushed off the agenda because, you know, of them wanting to concentrate on the coming lockout. So they kind of kicked the can down the road, but now we know they kicked the can down the road 6 weeks. But I wonder. I just wonder who was acting in good faith here and who wasn't.
That's interesting. Well, and Stephen Brofman today in his media availability was asked about the idea of a complete relocation. He said this plan was this. It was a partial season relocation plan. We don't have a plan for that. He's going to take a step back, and I guess eventually that might return to the table. There's other potential relocation sites, though. I'm sure the Major League Baseball at some point would like to go to Las Vegas, maybe to a lesser extent Portland, Charlotte, Nashville. But there's other cities that, barring this very unique plan, might jump Montreal in the pecking order. But we'll see.
There aren't a ton of other cities, Ben. The problem, and I know we got to go here in a sec, but the problem is, this plan in Montreal was about building an open-air stadium.
Yeah.
And the difference in economics between building an open-air stadium and a convertible stadium, which is what you would need if you're going to play there in April. Yeah. So the math doesn't work. The math doesn't work.
Well, in this current form, I don't know what that what that would look like if you were building a completely retractable roof stadium in Montreal that hosted a team for 181 games. The other thing before we do take the break that I did want to get to, and Mark mentioned it briefly, was Stu Sternberg said, quote, "Partial seasons are going to be the wave of the future in professional sports." And when this idea was first proposed and I heard it for the first time, it sounded so stupid, so outlandish, and I thought, no, nobody's actually thinking about this. This is dipping your toe in the waters of relocation, and eventually this will be the entire franchise move. No, man, 2.5 years they worked on this plan. It was really on the verge of happening. And there are, you pointed out some of the reasons why it makes sense that you do kind of double your fan base, that there are merchandising opportunities in both locations, that there's maybe even a tourism tie-in here. I can't throw out the idea that this actually might be, maybe not the wave of the future, because I don't think Leaf fans are all that interested in sharing their team with Hamilton. Sorry to the good folks of Hamilton. But I wonder if you are expanding, right? If you were moving into smaller regions, if it does make sense to share a franchise between a couple of different locations.
Well, you split the inventory, especially with baseball. It's a lot of inventory, the ticket inventory. You double, you not necessarily double your broadcast, your content rights, but you have at least two different markets in which to sell it. It might alter the way you build stadia. And, there are some precedents, the Kansas City Omaha Kings way back in the day, the Green Bay Packers used to split their season between Milwaukee and Green Bay. It's a different world, right? But again, we all understand the complications, but I think the initial reaction is that's nuts. Mm-hmm. I think that they actually have made a pretty good case as to why maybe it's not nuts. So it might take a different league, and I think Steve Bronfman said this, somebody else is going to have to take the risk. These guys weren't willing to do it.
No, they weren't willing to do it. And again, I wonder if the timing is part of it, because this is not normal times. It's not business as usual for Major League Baseball. They're in the middle of a lockout, and as serious or unserious as you may believe it to be, it's happening right now, and they're in the midst of negotiations with the Major League Baseball Players Association, and they would have had to ask them for permission to have this plan go ahead. It's just a devastating blow to the baseball loving citizens of Montreal, who now multiple times have gotten themselves to the point where they thought baseball had a chance to return. I mean, this is as close to reality as I think they've been since the Expos left Montreal, and maybe it happens if the Rays do have to relocate for good. But yeah, this is reason. If I was in a city where I hope to get a professional sports franchise, this would be reason number one. You don't get your hopes up until the piece of paper is signed, Stephen.
Yeah, I would love to be able to say this is just the prequel to the team moving to Montreal full time, but yeah, I'm not so sure. It's a bit heartbreaking. It really is, because I think a lot of us.
Yep.
Had our hearts set on this.
Yep, including poor Ariel Helwani. All right, when we come back, we'll talk to the all-time international goals leader and Olympic gold medalist, winner of the Best FIFA Special Award as well. Christine Sinclair joins us next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.